Hello and welcome to another episode of Django Chat, a podcast on the Django Web Framework. I'm Will Vincent, joined by Carlton Gibson. Hello, Carlton.
Hello, Will.
And this week we're joined by Nigel George, who runs DjangoBook.com, has written a number of books, has video courses, and lots more we'll get into. Welcome, Nigel.
Hi, Will. Hi, Carlton.
Hello, Nigel. Thanks for coming on the show.
Sure. Thank you.
So let's start with the big one. DjangoBook.com, you took that over years ago. How did you manage that?
I'm trying to remember how long ago it was, but it was just, I was writing. So I was writing under the masteringdjango.com domain. And it started out being quite lazy. I didn't want to start from scratch. And I'd always used the Django book resource that Jacob and the guys they published. And I had the original book. And then there was the old green and yellow website that was there. And I just started republishing that content because it was all open content, and started republishing it on masteringdjango.com. And a few guys around the community, I know Danny, Roy Greenfield, he was harping at Jacob, can we do something about this site? Because everything points at it and it's all hopelessly out of date. And I threw into the community, well, here's masteringdjango.com. And then I sort of reached out to Jacob and said, well, I can take care of this website for you. And he said, yes. And that was as simple as that. He just checked it off with Adrian, and they handed the domain over. And I've pretty much been the somewhat reluctant, sometimes caretaker of it since.
Super.
There you go. Well, I think probably maybe half our listeners are intimately familiar with Django Book and half maybe have no idea what it was, but it was the original Django Book written by the creators and went through a number of iterations, right? I forget how many they did.
This is how I learned Django.
They got to an unofficial third edition, which was the one that I picked up. But that was always my favorite story about Django, because I would get emails early in the piece from people just taking me to task for pinching the Django docs, and that I was a pirate and I was plagiarizing and I was this and I was that. I had to patiently explain to a few people, this is the Django book. This was written by the creators of Django. Yeah, it is going to look a bit like the docs. So that was quite amusing to start off with. But of course now that content has well and truly been retired, and it's all pretty much new stuff.
But there's bits where it's not though, right? Because there's bits where it's like, you know, and if you're used to PHP, then it's got, you know, this these, and you know, you might be familiar with this one. And that's just straight from the original source. It just hasn't been.
Yeah, no, that stuff should all be gone. But the other thing is too, is that the reason why I like the original Django book is that they write very similar to the way I write. Like I write just sort of really quite laid back. I've got that Aussie attitude to my authorship, is that I tend not to sort of add too much fluff to the writing. It's all very direct. And Adrian and Jacob's writing was all very similar. And like the pragmatic programmer thing is pretty much my career. You know, I was the one that would always sit on the peripheral of the language flame wars going, guys, really, honestly, and sort of have a ball from time to time. But it was always like, well, stop thinking about software as a religion and start thinking about it as a tool that you actually use. And I have the same approach, and I very much like that. But yeah, I should have weeded out most of the really old stuff. And PHP is an easy target, honestly. Like, you know, this.
It's really interesting, the Laravel community, because it really has a, I don't know if a renaissance is the right word, but I have a couple of friends who swear by Laravel, and actually there's a number
really
of things
active.
I think Django can adopt from that. But PHP, right, has gone through a lot of iterations in the language itself
since
Django first came out.
And I can't go
Django
too far, because the Django book website's WordPress. So,
No, nobody's criticizing PHP, but like it was the dominant thing at the time, like mid-early 2000s.
Yeah,
and it was like, and the Django book and the first version of the docs, and there are still references, these kind of sentences in the Django docs from this epoch.
Yeah,
it was like,
absolutely.
Look, here's a way of introducing Django compared to something that you'll already know. It's not necessarily throwing shade or bagging on PHP. It's just, this is different. You'll be used to doing it that way.
And no, now no, we'll happily bag PHP. I don't mind.
Well, maybe we can talk about how you got into programming in Django, because especially, you know, the attitude you have, not everyone has. I think Carlton and I are more along the lines of, you know, tool users rather than
Are there still flame wars?
Zealots.
Like, do we all...
Yeah, there are, but we're too old for all
right.
this.
Yeah, okay.
Sent Carlton links on Reddit about this and that and Django just to get a rise. And,
yeah.
You see it a few times, it's like, okay, we're still doing that.
Yeah, or something. No, they never went away. We just lost interest in them.
Well, that's just like, we should mention before we got on, I was saying the U-shaped happiness in life, where you're happiest when you're younger, and then our age, 40s, 50s, it bottoms out, and then you become happier because your expectations change, not that your day-to-day changes, and you know it. So what? Like,
and less stuff.
However you manage,
less stuff worries you. It's like
I nicked up my car the other day, and the guy was asking me how much I wanted to spend to fix things. He's like, "Oh, this thing is cosmetic, and do you care?" And I was like, "I got kids. Like, nothing is perfect in my life." So he's like, "Yeah, I get that." I was like, "I don't care about a scratch."
Yeah. Well, and you know what the world's thrown at all of us over the last 18 months. And that stuff, it's like, you know what, priorities change.
Yeah, I'm just happy when anything works.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
I think younger me was like, why isn't everything perfect? And now I'm like, wow, it's amazing, anything.
So,
or any.
Back to your question, where we started, was that pragmatism, so I have never actually in my life been employed as a computer programmer. I've never actually been employed as a software developer. I'm an engineer. I'm electronics guy. And programming came to me long before there were courses on programming. So like I'm 50 next birthday, admitting that to the world. And I got to see my first computer when I was 10. And computers were brand new when I was 10. And nobody knew what to do with the things. So, you know, I remember I had my God disk, which was a DOS 3.3 disk on a 5.25 floppy, which most people have never heard of before.
We have.
Yeah. The generation now are going, what? What's a floppy? Nobody knew what it was. So they handed it over to me, and the basic and the DOS manuals, which came with computers way back then.
You used to get a manual.
Yeah.
They were amazing.
Yeah. And I jumped onto the school's Apple IIe. Which was a recent import to Australia from the great United States. And I started from there and started programming. So by the time I left school, I was playing with electronics. I was working with computers, and this is what I wanted to do. But I went into engineering. So software was something that just came as a part of the job, the role, or whatever. I'm entrepreneurial, so I actually ran my own computer hardware and software business for a few years in the 90s, right up to the Millennium Bug, which is another thing that not many people have heard about for quite a long period of time. I was silly. I told people the truth and didn't make any money out of it. So I just ended up working my way up through technical engineering, design, R&D, and that sort of stuff. So I was always using software to solve problems. And that's where the thing I've only ever come at software, which is why over the years, as much as I like taking pot shots at some software, you know, don't get me started on Java as well. But, you know, I've actually used all of them as tools over time, and they have their pluses and their minuses. So where I got to Django was that I was doing early in, before they called the Internet of Things, it was just like distributed sensor networks, and that the Internet of Things, you know, wasn't really coined until a few years ago. But I was developing environmental sensors for the local university here. And I'd been using Python, because I don't know if you've ever used Python on really large text data sets, but it's brilliant, like a couple of lines of code and you can pass megabytes of text data. It's just fantastic. And I'd got bored of WinForms and C because I've been doing that for a few years, and I wrote a desktop interface with WXPython, and just for the hell of it, because I've been working with Python. And the university and the local water mob here said, well, we want to put this online. We want to look at this stuff online. Can you build a website that shows all this data? And they wanted to see maps and all that sort of stuff. I thought, well, I've been writing stuff in Python. So I Googled Python web framework. And that's where we started with Django. But back then, Django was 0.96. Hadn't even had a full release. So we're talking 2006, 2007. And yeah, that's where it was. So I went in and out with that. And then I got to a point where pretty much the only resource in the market was Danny's book. Danny's and Audrey's The
Two Scoops of Django.
And there was pretty much nothing else out there except this out-of-date Django book that everybody was complaining about. And by then, I don't know where Adrian had gone, but Jacob had moved on to what's the hosting mob?
Heroku.
Heroku, yeah. Yeah, and had no real interest. And that's kind of where it went from there, is that I thought, well, I fancied myself as an author, and I wrote a fiction book, and it was disgusting. It was terrible. And my wife told me, well, if you're going to write something and stop talking about it, except she used a different language. and I picked Django because it was an easy target. And then I just got deeper and deeper, and I enjoyed it more and more. And here we are, what, 6 years later.
Fantastic.
And then you've also done, so I'd love to talk to you about teaching Django, because you've done the site, the book, you've done a couple books. You've also done videos.
Correct.
I mean, we started talking, you've done a lot of videos too. So I don't know how to enter into that. I guess, what do you see, or what have you heard from listeners or readers, viewers, you know, who prefers what? Because that's what I'm always curious, because people always say, why don't you have videos? And I find that not everyone wants videos, but some people do. And I suppose I'm sort of prejudiced towards thinking that videos are more total beginner level.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that or disagree with that?
It depends. It really does. Well, it depends what mode your brain's in at the time. Like, obviously, if you do any sort of training on teaching and that, they talk about learning modalities. And, you know, you've got your auditory, your visual, and you've got your, you know, in terms of watching videos and reading and that sort of stuff. And they say if you want people to absorb material as deeply as possible, you've got to actually get them in multiple modes. So I actually think that it's complementary, because I even know my own consumption. Like, I sometimes when I'm chasing it, because just recently I've had a bit of a run on Amazon and AWS and that stuff. And when I was kind of getting my head around how that all worked, I not only did online reading stuff, but I also watched the videos and that, and I trolled through LinkedIn Learning and did a whole bunch of that sort of stuff. And I find myself that I get a greater absorption right across that. And that's most of the feedback that I got. Like, some people will watch videos, but it tends to be actually what that person's after, I notice the most. If somebody's just skimming over something out of interest, yeah, they'll just watch videos and they won't have the depth in that. But when people are genuinely trying to learn Django, I find they come at me from multiple modes. I know I have a core group of people that have pretty much been with me from the start, and they've pretty much consumed my content in all modes. They will listen to it, they will watch it, and they will read it as well. These are guys that have got the course, they've got the books, and they sort of send me emails and that sort of stuff. So it's definitely one of those, I think, especially technology benefits from multiple modes, different ways to consume the same content. Obviously, the quality varies widely. And there's areas where I won't touch, like, don't get me started on places like Udemy and that, where they just exploit authors. They don't teach. But I think having that mix of content out there is actually valuable, and it gives people choice.
Yeah. I think that's, I mean, whatever level you're at, whether you're a beginner or, you know, more advanced, like, you know, to have a video perhaps that gives you a high level overview, and then when you go to the docs, it's going to make a lot more sense than you try and take on the high level concepts from the docs. It can be like, this is hard going.
Yeah, yeah, and it can get bogged down because programming can get dry. You know, it's just one of those things. It's like learning any language. You know, is that to be able to order a drink and have a ball at a Spanish bar, you're sort of going to get more out of learning the language, but that means having to wade through a lot of stuff that's a lot drier and a lot less fun. And, you know, computer languages are like human languages. You know, there is a basic syntax, there's a basic structure that we can all get. Like, we all know how to open our mouth and make sounds. But the different ways of getting that across, you've got to do the hard yards. You've just got to get there. And, I think depth comes from that broad ways of consuming stuff. In terms of what I'd prefer, write every day of the week. Video is a pain in the butt. Just what you need to do to go through. And of course, I'm type A about everything. So you're just never going to see any of my work where I'm just sitting there. You know, you see those YouTube videos where a guy's umming and ahhing and clicking through the screen and explaining one thing and typing forward and deleting backwards and all. I can't do that. I heavily produce all of my videos. So
it's a lot of takes.
Yeah, well, it's not so much takes, but it's edits and overlays. Like, if you look at the stuff that I've got there, I do overlays, and then I'll highlight stuff on each line of code and explain each line of code and that. And that's a lot of post. That's a lot of extra work.
I think you're probably responsible for why I haven't done any videos. Because we've talked for a number of years. And I think I'm inclined, as you are, down that route of not being okay with just sort of not winging it, but a more informal style. I want it to be more polished. And hearing you talk about, you know, all these things, I just was like, wow, it's just a whole nother realm. And then, I mean, the challenge with Django, right, is there's a new one every 8 months. And the three of us understand that generally those aren't huge changes, but it can mean having to redo almost everything. I mean, I'm almost done with finally my 3.2 updates because, you know, something changes and then the web browsers change. So I can't just like swap in a screenshot. I got to do all the new screenshots. And so the idea of doing it on video seems
It adds a lot. Difficult. You're ahead of me. I've only just started my 3.2 stuff because I'm sort of blending it into my 4 stuff because there's not a lot of difference at the level that I'm teaching. So like my beginner's book and that really... My beginner's book, it was a bigger pain going from 3.0 to 3.1 than it was to go from pretty much 2.2 to 3 because of the change with Pathlib, because that broke everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a whole post on that for the SEO. I was like, I remember telling Carlton, I was like, people are going to muck this one up. I mean, it's...
Well, I've got a rider once it's like, you know... The pathway that the Django's development team has chosen, that's the one that they've chosen. But for a content developer, yes, it's painful.
I mean, it's difficult.
But it just weeds things out, right? I mean, you and I are grizzled veterans of content at this point. I've really worked to adopt the attitude of, you know, it's not my favorite thing to revisit the same thing over and again, but at the same time, it's something that people want to read. And so it's sort of like you've got a guitar sitting behind you. It's like a band playing greatest hits. Like, I'm happy to have greatest hits. I think I keep making it better each time. And, you know, I'll have some for me. Like, I'm working on a Python book now, and I'll have some for the masses. And, you know, I'm happy to have that mix.
Yeah, yeah. I like your grizzled veteran thing, because it definitely some days it feels like I've got PTSD, that's for sure.
Well, I don't even see... It's just part of it is I don't even see things sometimes because I'm on... I don't know, version 6 or something of mine, and someone will write something in and there's a small, I don't know, usually it's not code, it's a text thing, but I just don't even see it.
It's just not there anymore. And then you get the ones where they insist your code is wrong and you're on like version 6 or 7. It's like,
yeah,
dude.
You know, I kind of appreciate I guess I'm old enough to appreciate the passion, because I know that, I mean, there's a tiny, tiny percent chance I'm wrong, but I'm like, I'm pretty sure I'm right about this.
Yeah.
When it's, you know, there's an error as opposed to, oh, is that the best way to do it? So I suppose I sort of, you know, I'm like, yeah, I've gotten the same kind of emails for so long. When someone comes in really firing, you know, I never respond within 24 hours because half the time they'll figure it out and send me another email being like, oh, I figured it out. Yeah. So I just let that lie. But then I'm like, okay, like, yeah, you're young buck, you know, you're passionate, whatever your age, you know, I appreciate that. You can harness that.
Yeah,
I'm more like you. I'm like, well, you know, like, yeah, whatever the language framework, like I figured out, you know, I've sort of lost a little of that beginner's arrogance or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's definitely something.
It's optimism.
Well, that's
yeah. Remember when you started programming, you're like, I can build this in a week, no problem. You know, yeah. 10 years
later.
Well,
that's right. Yeah. First 2 years, you don't know anything. 2 to 5, you know everything. And then beyond that, you know how hard everything is. And
yeah.
I mean, that's why I love beginners. Like, I asked my dad the other day, he's like, yeah, I'm finally going to read one of your books. I was like, okay, like, sure. Like, and I was like, well, what project do you want to build? Right? Like, why do you want to do this? He's retired. I mean, it's like, why do you want to actually get through the dry stuff? And he's like, well, he's an architect. He's like, I want to build an app that will, you take a picture of a house and it will, you like, figure out what type of style it is and da, 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 da. And I was like, whoa, like that's not a CRUD app.
No, but, you know,
people come in with these crazy ideas, but I think it's
simpler?
Great. Yeah. No, but I want people to, like, before I tell you what's hard, like, you know, write down your ideas because everything's doable. And then someone like me can say what's hard or not. And, you know, things change too. I mean, you can use existing APIs for image recognition. So anyway, so I enjoy someone, I'm like, wow. Cause I just start thinking, you know, how would I actually do anything? And then I'm just like, oh, that's hard. That's hard. That's hard. That's hard. You know, I get kind of discouraged.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, they don't know the difference. So
no. Well, I had a reader that sort of took me through a similar journey. I didn't understand what he was trying to achieve, but it sounded kind of cool. But he worked his way through it, and I answered a few stuff. And like in the end, I basically said, mate, you're doing really, really well. You know, once you work it all out, come and tell me because you'll be teaching me something.
True. Yeah, that
because
happens sometimes.
Because you'd find
too.
That too. Like there's a lot to Django, and I find I've got plenty of breadth, but not a lot of depth in some areas. Like, you know, I can sort of talk to a lot of the top end of most of the stuff that's in Django, but when you're writing about it all the time, you know, you're not actually in the thick of the code writing really deep and working stuff like out. Like, you know, and you're doing things like professional. For me, you know, when you're writing, it's different to professional programming. And I find that, so like with mastering Django, when it got to 650, 670 pages, it's like, oh, come on, enough is enough. I just can't do anymore. And then, you know, I get taken to task because I skimmed over some sections and said, just go read the docs. It's like, please, I've typed until my fingers have bled for 18 months. You know, go and have a look at the docs. So when people come to you where they've had the time and they've got into the project and they've got really deep, you actually find yourself learning from them. And I think that's just great.
Like, teaching materials almost going to necessarily be at the beginner to intermediate level, right? Because there's so many, the market there is much more addressable. Like, there's lots of beginners, there's lots of intermediates. There aren't so many advanced people. So if you're going to produce learning content, it's got to target the people who are there.
And it's also difficult to take them to the next stage where they'd be doing what they would be doing in a professional setting. Like, I made a conscious choice not to, you know, have Git running in any of my courses or anything like that. I made a conscious choice not to build test suites and that sort of stuff because it's like, these are the mechanics of being a professional programmer. They don't teach you programming. And like, you know, like that. And I keep thinking, well, one, there's plenty of resources out there for that stuff. And two, I detest testing anyway. So I would avoid it like the plague and let somebody else teach it.
Well, we should have an episode with you and Adam Johnson on to...
You'll get Brian Ocken on to fight it out with you. Nige, if you're building a site, what do? You just sort of click through and make sure it works? I mean...
No judgment in that statement.
No, just asking.
No, I just get somebody else to do the test.
Right, okay, yeah.
I,
so it's automated.
Yeah, no, so I've been building software with Agile like long before they called it Agile. Somebody gave it a really fancy name about 2000, but we've been doing it since the early 90s because you're working in small development teams. So, you know, the whole idea of MVP and iterations and all of that sort of stuff. So I've read the testing gate and all of that sort of stuff, and I understand that stuff. I would rather just hand it off to a QC. But at the end of the day, is that I'm more of an advocate of the whole idea. Yeah, I could go off on a tangent, but the whole red light, green light refactor thing is that it's like write something that breaks and then put in any old thing that'll make the test pass. It's like, what?
Yeah, no,
and
that's,
then the trivial, yeah, doing trivial stuff. So I do it, but at module level. So like I build a module that I know works, and I throw in everything I can at it, and then I add something to it, and then I add something to that, and add something to that.
And sometimes, like, it's, yeah, you're not sure what behavior you're trying to write at the beginning because you're just exploring the domain.
True.
So to write a test, it's like, well, I can't write a test yet. So you kind of craft up the software, and then you're like, well, I better have a test just to make sure that I don't break it later on.
But that'll get you off Harry Percival's Christmas list, saying that sort of
stuff. Well, I'm already off his list, I think. I like the Django all around.
Yeah.
I fall in the bucket of, I mean, I don't think anyone's truly test-driven development at the extreme, but I find I'm more playful with it. I want, and then right before I push something up to master, I'm like, oh, I need some tests for this, because that is the best time to write the tests. But like after I've gotten it working and I'm happy with it, because it slows me down to write tests when I'm switching around the code often a number of times before I get it.
I think we're also a product of the environment we're in. Like I'm intensely creative with software because I've always worked in the R&D end of the spectrum. So like I'm solving problems early in the piece. I've never been the one at the end that has to, you know, make this work for a million users. You know, and we're just a product of that experience. Like programming to me is creativity, and the things that I use it for is creative pursuits, which is why I end up writing about it. I'm not out there grinding out code every day, because that's just not my place in the world. Like I've employed programmers like that, and I respect that, and you know, I've worked with quality engineers and those sorts of things. And I'm about to step into a product management role in a couple of weeks. So I'm going to be dealing with those sorts of guys again on that. But see, I'm the product manager. I'm not the guy who has to make tests work, you know. So I'm still working at the creative and problem solving end. So I think it just, our experience with that, it comes back to that pragmatism and saying, well, I have my own views of this. I understand how it all works together. But I know what I like and I know what I don't like. It. That comes down to our discussion about being an old fart. You stop caring after a while. It's like, yeah, No, these are the things I like. These are things I don't like. So I'm not going to do the things I don't like anymore.
But there's a big difference between that and then going that step further and saying, and you have to like what I like too, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. But that gets back to those Sloan Wars that we're not interested in, remember?
Yeah.
Well, Carlton, I mean, you, how do you, I'd be curious just your public take on testing, because on Django itself, Django is eminently, you know,
it's massive test suite.
It's very tested.
Yeah, I mean, but the key bit is regression tests. How do I know I didn't break something? So what you want is for every existing behavior, you want a test that covers it, so that when you adjusting the code and you change the behavior, that's flagged by the test suite. And then you might be like, actually, that's an allowable test. You know, that's an allowable behavior change. But what you don't want is gaps in the test suite. Where the behavior, well, how does it behave? Well, we don't know. We don't know how it behaves because it's not covered by the tests. And that's where you run into difficulties, because someone comes on with a fix. Well, all the existing tests pass. We push it out, and then, you know, Django's, you know, X point Y, new feature, blah, blah, blah. And then we get, reports on the tracker saying this is a change in behavior from a previous version. Then we got trouble. But that's different from the situation Nigel's talking about, where you're first creating something. You don't necessarily need to begin with a test, right? But as it starts to get bigger and bigger, regression tests become more and more important. And for something like Django, which is 15, 16, 17 years old, you know, and a lot of people rely on it, we can't break things, so we need tests.
Yeah, if I was a Django dev, I wouldn't be saying, no, we don't need tests.
Yeah, but, you know, yeah, it's not... creative in that same way. It's not new, is it?
No, it's just not a space I inhabit.
I mean, sometimes I'll do test-driven development. Like if I've got I need it to do this particular part of a behavior. So, okay, write a test for that particular part of behavior, make that work. And then I can move on to the next step of the problem. And I've got a test covering the first bit. And then I can build up to, like that. Sometimes I do develop that way. Other times I do it, get it working, and then write some tests to make sure I don't break it later.
I think too, like with that, because I'm from an engineering point of view too, we're working in very, very small memories. In C, and you don't have test suites. You basically have a text file that has all sorts of rubbish in it that you throw at it to see what breaks. And you're kind of testing from that point of view.
More an integration test and output.
Yeah, it's similar. It's just that you're type testing. You're basically saying, well, you've got five inputs to this thing. Let's throw, mix up text and everything. Like, obviously in Python it's not such a problem with dynamic typing, although you do get really weird results. But of course embedded C, or any of the C's, absolutely detest when you throw the wrong type at a variable. And then with those embedded system you get memory overflows and all sorts of lovely interesting stuff that we don't see in the Python world happen. But you just don't have the overhead to have a test suite on a chip that's got 256K memory on it.
Yeah.
I think the other bit related to testing, and I'm curious, Nigel, what your experience is that people who are learning Django sometimes will say, hey, I got my first job, or I switched jobs. And they have this sort of sense of shock when they work on a commercial code base because it's not as clean as open source software.
No, it's a very different creature, isn't it? It's like, I think we all go through that shock phase. It's like what you look at a commercial code base, and I've been around long enough to see good ones, bad ones, and plenty in the middle. And I've also been around long enough to be, to blame for some good ones, some bad ones, and some in the middle.
Get blame.
Yeah. Especially things like, Windows 95 DLLs and some of those really, really hideous program structures that just give me the shudders even thinking about them these days. I think we're always going to do that. I think, and even now, like, I'm sheltered from that most of the time because I am not, like, I'm even switching back into IT now. As I said before, it's as a product manager. I'm just not working as an engineer in those areas. And having moved on from it at times where a lot of the technologies guys need to deal with now, or guys and girls, obviously, but programmers need to deal with now, just didn't exist. Like, all of this rubbish in the front end. Like, I don't mind JavaScript, but it's just like, which one? I don't know. I don't understand that somebody else.
HTMX. HTMX solved.
Yeah. It's like I've only just starting to decipher that, and I think it's much, much harder. Like everybody's has to be full stack, in that they might hire a front end developer, a back end developer, an AWS expert, or something like that. But at the end of the day, if you don't actually understand how it all works together, you don't understand any of it. That's a world that I'm glad I'm actually a fair way away from these days. So yeah, I think it is a bit of a shock for most people, and it's not something that I'd be in a rush to do.
I think as well, like, the most code only barely runs, right? Most real code in real life. Maybe the code for, I don't know, some nuclear rocket launching system is double checked and proofed with theorems and all the rest. But real code in most companies, it's like, yeah, it runs, but don't touch that staple there. Because
it'll bring the whole building down.
So speaking of full stack, how much do you cover APIs in your own material? Like, because I have a whole book on it, but trying to kind of get at that, but
close to none.
No one can write a book on.
Django has kept me busy for 6 or 7 years. Like, I haven't really had to step forward. I get a lot more of that. Like, obviously the Django REST framework, I get questions about that every other day. And then doing other things like full stack Django. So I was trying to work out, well, how do I approach this? Like, how do I look at things? It was a couple of years back, I was originally looking at Angular, but of course that's kind of plummeted in terms of popularity compared to React and all of that. And then of course React's built on like NPM and just trying to get my head around all of that stuff. And the other thing is that I'm still at that stage going, well, I can understand React. This is great. You've got all of these objects. You can encapsulate like, you know, a UI and everything like that. But shit, we've been doing that with the, you know, the Django template, the DTL for years. So why is it so impressive? Well, it puts it in the front end. Okay. Yeah. All right. So that's what JavaScript's for. But just trying to get my head around, well, how do we do React and Django justice in one thing? And how do we do things that are actually teaching people how to come up with real life solutions here rather than just cobbling something together so that I'm using React and Django in one thing?
Well, that's a good point. How deep does your knowledge have to be before you feel like you can teach something? Because I mean,
Well, I'm actually, I'll tell you the truth. Most of the teaching that I do is basically I'm the learner with the learners.
Okay,
So whenever I disappear into depth, I don't come from a position of expertise. A lot of my writing is approachable because I'm learning with them.
So you could be learning React.
So I've started playing around with it. So you know, to sort of to answer Will's question, I've started dabbling, but I haven't yet decided where I'm going with Django next. Like, because you've got this 8-month cycle, and you've got this thing that you hit 2.2, and as soon as there's a 0.0 that comes out inconveniently 3 months later, you're explaining to people again that no, 2.2 is, or it's whatever 0.2 is, no longer obsolete. It isn't obsolete. We've just gone to the next major one. You know, because every time when we went from 1.11 to 2, people are saying, where's your 2 book? And I say, hang on, 1.11 is still good for another 2 years. And I've had this conversation each iteration of Django. And keeping on top of that, when I work full time, has been a thing on itself. But it's flat out obvious, like Django does not work in a vacuum, and its future is working with the front ends and how that works together. I know Django's got async now, but again, that's in an area that if I was teaching somebody async, I'd be learning too, because I've never had to work with it. I've never worked with sites big enough where async makes a difference. You know, I've always worked in that. I've been around since WSGI was actually a new thing. It was all CGI back then, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And you had to write scripts on the server to restart the Python long running process. Otherwise, your server would just go blank and sit there every hour or so. You know, it's like, so. I haven't decided yet whether I want to keep on the front edge of the learning curve, or I just want to sort of, you know, slowly slide back and stick with the stuff that I know.
I think what you said about where you are in your own learnings when you create content is that rings true for me. And actually, that's something I wanted to ask you about, because I find, so the first versions of all my stuff I wrote as I was learning it. So I had that mindset. But now, years later, 6-7 iterations later, the challenge is I've lost that perspective. I get lots of emails from readers, which helps me have a sense of what trips people up, but I don't feel that myself. And that's actually something I'm facing with the Python book. It's sort of fun to approach it top down in a way where I feel like I know Python reasonably well. It's not like I'm learning it for the first time. So when I'm doing my updates or I'm doing new content now, I think it's almost more of a challenge, to be honest, to mimic what a beginner is going through, because I'm not a beginner anymore.
Yeah, I think we always get that. And the other thing that I get with that too is that it's material that I have seen so many times, I just don't want to look at it anymore too.
Yeah. Well, I think, but that's where the context matters, right? I mean, because it's, as you're saying, with different programming languages, it's the same old concepts, but it's the same to us because we have experience. You know, that's the thing is that, I mean, when I wrote my Django materials, I actually didn't find yours when I was looking, or I might not have. But I had that sense from the docs, hey, this presumes you already know web development with PHP, which makes sense, but I didn't know PHP or web development. Mm. So I often see that people assign to Django blame for learning web development when you just kind of have to get through it with something and get another framework, get another language, and then you'll appreciate it. So people lump those two together.
Yeah, and I think we're never going to win that argument. Like, really, when you're doing beginner's material for a particular language, you've got to make the assumptions, because you turn around, like, I know I've done a Python primer with my Django stuff, so it's on the website for free, and it's in the book, in the beginner's book and that, but it's never really been hugely utilized, and I've tried to do stuff before where you dig a little bit more into HTML and CSS to provide support, but ultimately you go, well, again, it comes back to the same discussion I had to sell myself with Mastering Django, and that is a book that is Django from start to finish. It's 650 pages, and I still had to leave a heap of stuff out, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like you're always going to start a journey with people, and knowing some of those people have absolutely no idea about anything, and all you can say is, well, this is what I am going to teach you, and this is what I'm not going to teach you. And I think I've just taken that approach with the books and the start, and you did the same with yours as well. It's like, well, this is what I am going to teach you. If you need to find that, here's a whole bunch of links, but I can't be a start you from very scratch sort of thing.
Right. You have to figure out where to draw that line. And I think the top Amazon review, the most helpful review for my beginner's book is shows doesn't tell, which, you know, I'm like, well, yeah, that's the point. Like,
one star, didn't tell, you know, showed.
No, people are generally pretty nice. But I mean, that's the thing, is that, you know, my own interest, right? Like all of us, I'm more interested in the details now because they make more sense to me. But when I was starting out, I was like, yeah, I just want this to work.
Yeah.
So I try to sprinkle in the understanding as we also get something, you know, as we put up a website. But it's, I think that's what I think about, like, where do I draw that line when I'm teaching?
Well, yeah. And you know, I get a similar line sort of things, because I play the Python setup right down the line. So I used to use virtualenv, but once the later versions of Python 3 came out, I just used venv and pip. And, you know, and people are saying, why aren't you using pipenv, or why aren't you using this, and or why aren't you using that, and why aren't you using the other? And it's like, well, I'm teaching something here, so I'm always going to play at first principles, standard modules, everything, because if you understand pip and you understand venv, you'll have a better understanding of what pipenv actually does, you know, and if you ever need to step back or you've got a different toolkit. It's the same as, you know, right back at the beginning of the discussion, is that software is tools. I don't hesitate to use the word religion, but some people really do treat software languages like that, like they evangelize about something. It's like, well, no, you're just solving, you're using tools here. And then it comes back, well, this is the basic tool set. This is what I'm going to give you, the basic tool set. And I'm going to explain to you what that basic tool set does, what it'll achieve for you, and where it will get you. Because I think once people understand those fundamentals, they can jump into the more heavier duty stuff and understand it. They get that conceptual stuff. Because, like, I've done enough languages to know they are all fundamentally the same. Like, computer languages are the same. Syntax and structure, the way we build things and all of that, has not really changed. We just use different semantics. We use different, you know, Python got rid of curly braces and semicolons. But the way you structure a class or a function is pretty much the same. And then you've got everything that came out of C and that, you know, and JavaScript and all those. So at the end of the day, I find once people know that basic toolkit, they can turn their hand to just about anything that's out there.
And yeah, and the failure modes on the more advanced tools, like, they can be mysterious if you don't know what's going on. It's like, well, it didn't work. You get some error and you've got no way forward. Whereas if you understand the more simple tools, it's like, well, actually, I can recover from this because it's just a folder with some stuff in. And
I think it's also, it's a mark of, if not immaturity, I sort of drop my opinion down a couple notches of someone if they are either A, incredibly confident, because the best programmers I know are not, you know, they're not braggy about their ability at all. And then if they're deeply wedded to a particular tool set saying, this is the one true way, it's like, well, how many ways have you tried? Because, I mean, we all on this podcast appreciate Python and Django, but there's other good ways. There'll be new ones. You know, being wedded to a particular ideology seems immature to me.
Well, yeah. Like, I've spent most of the last 18 months writing VBA, you know. So, you know, you've got to have an appreciation that every tool has its place. I agree with you because anybody who has to tell you how great a programmer they are is not a great programmer, because most of the rest of us have learned to be humble a lot time before. Like, if there's no other profession out there where you can be wrong about 900 times a day.
And there's a strange, 12-year-old girl somewhere who comes up with way, teaches me something about Django, reading my stuff. That happens all the time. I mean, age isn't a limitation, so you see the talent that, it's opportunity.
I wanted to ask you both, because you're both creators of teaching content for Django. I wanted to ask you your opinion on, where the level should be pitched for the Django docs, because I quite often see criticism of the Django docs. They're too hard. The tutorial's too hard to get going. And then I look around the community and I think, but there's lots of great getting started material, like awesome material, like your two stuff and other stuff as well. And I kind of look at the capacity of the Django contributors to produce that stuff, and it's just not there. And, what do you think the balance is? Is there room for... I mean, I kind of think it's nice that people have to reach outside the Django docs to find more stuff, but...
And from my point of view, Carlton, I actually think that's just the way it has to be. Like, the Django tutorial gets people started. That's where most people will see it. That'll be at the top of every search term. So that's where anybody coming to Django is going to start. You look at the documentation for every software project out there. At the end of the day, is that most of the documentation that comes out of Django is the same as documentation that comes out of Python. You're writing in doc strings. You're not actually writing teaching material. You're writing reference documentation. And at the end of the day, bringing that out, it isn't the job of the guys doing Django. That the job of the dev team is to make it stable, to help it grow, to possibly not bring a major version out every 12 months, so the rest of us can keep up. I think it's a valid question, but it's not one that the dev team should actually have to answer. They should say, no, go and see Nigel Will. Or the other guys that are putting out huge work out there. I know there's a guy, I've forgotten his name off the top of my head, but he's the Simplest Better Than Complex. He does some fantastic material. And there's the Tango with Django guys, the Django girls. Like, there's a lot of us out here. I don't know what Danny and Audrey are doing these days. They've been quite quiet for a while. But there's people out here. Like, this comes back to the discussion before about the difference between engineers and content creators. We come from a different mindset. I'm not terribly sure I could get as much out of what I do, and the people that learn from me can get as much out of it if I was a card-carrying engineer. Like, we've seen some of those guys on YouTube, and man, is that stuff dry and hard to follow.
No comment.
But Will, you put a lot of effort into that too. Like your work is very similar in that like we do something different, but it's complementary. Pushing the dev team to try and mimic what we do is a different set of skills, and it's also not necessary. We need to sell books.
Yeah, I mean, I understand now deeply the distinction between docs and tutorials. I think I was in the shoes of a beginner where I said I just wanted both. And I think that's, beginners or someone who's frustrated, just they want both. And we three understand why that will just never happen. But someone who's new doesn't understand or care. They're just frustrated. So I think that's, you know, what would I add to the docs? I think it would be nice to have a simpler introductory, something beyond polls, something a little more Flask-like that's Hello World. I mean, Carlton's done a whole talk on this. We have, you know, there's room to add something else. But beyond that, you know, it's just not possible. But I don't know how we explain that to someone new to web development, that this is just how it is. It's unbelievable that the docs are even as good as they are. And if you're frustrated, you know, I mean, it's also Django purposely doesn't recommend any resources, which makes sense because Django's its own thing. But it makes it frustrating for a newcomer because they don't know who to trust. Like you were saying, people have followed you on your career as a creator. I find that's the same way. If someone likes a current teacher, they'll take everything from that teacher, and everyone does it differently. So that's why I always say, if you like my stuff, here's more. And if you don't, there's plenty of other people with a different take on it. You just need to find someone who matches up with your learning style.
Yeah.
That's what I would say.
Yeah, I think so. And a lot of them too, you're not going to, like, there's so many people who will come to that and say, I want to understand this in 10 minutes, you know, and it's this massive multi-million line project, but I need to understand it today. And then they'll go to the next thing, and this guy's not helping me understand it today. You know, like there's this expectation that it's all going to magically come together.
But we can I think we can sniff that out. I mean, I feel like my ability to sniff that out from an email has gotten
a lot stronger. Very good at it.
I'm happy. Well, I mean, you know, I'm not free tech support. You know, I'm happy to help people if it's related to my content. I'm happy to point them somewhere else if it's a quick one. If someone's just tossing a bunch of code at me or, you know, something else, it's like, you know, I'm not getting paid to answer your question. And just because you don't know that this is an incredibly complex question, even if I provide the answer to you, which I'd have to spend time on, you wouldn't appreciate it. So I don't lose sleep on that. What's the main way someone should find your material? Is it the djangobook.com website? Because you have books and courses.
Best place to go is the website, because that's where the free stuff is. And you know, that's where I publish anything that I'm doing. It's just djangobook.com.
And then there's a student login. Is that still active? Can I ask about that?
There was. So I've made that course free. So I had a beginner's course that it was a paid course for a long while. But I made a decision that I'm going to make that free. So that's open now. So anybody can go on, they can go and take that course. It's still packaged up as a course at the moment. But all the videos on Vimeo, which I'm paying for. So I'm pretty much going to tidy it up for 3.2 and migrate it to YouTube. So it's just linked there as that. And I'm going to leave that free. I'm not actually going to make the course paid again. So it's pretty much just the books and the content there. And I do have a YouTube channel, but it's kind of got nothing on it. Keep an eye out on the Django Book website for when that's actually working. I got this idea. I want to play a little bit more with Django. Like, writing books, as you would well know, Will, is a real mission. And as much as it's great to give birth to that baby at the end, it's definitely hard labor. So I'm looking at probably doing some much shorter content and just posting that on YouTube and on the site, and I don't know, you know, what I'll do with that. I'll probably bundle it up as PDFs and, like, you know, things that people can use on multiple devices and that, but definitely much shorter content, just like how to do this in Django kind of stuff. And that'll all be on the website and that as well. So, yeah, that's going to be the best place. And of course, there's the updates for the beginner's book and for Mastering Django, which will most likely be updates for 3.2 and then just like a free addendum for Django 4, because, again, at this teaching level, Django 3.2 and Django 4 are pretty much the same beast.
Yeah, I think that's right. I wondered... We both have all this different content. Like, what are your, like, teaching fantasies? Like, mine is to have one book that, like, instead of having all these sites, to take my three books and just have one book, and, you know, that cannibalizes my sales. But the idea of just having one thing and being like, here you go, seems quite nice.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really know. I don't think I actually have a what you would call it a teaching fantasy with Django because it's for me it's a hobby.
Wow, I mean that's the healthiest way to do it.
I think that
what you were saying though about shorter things, like when I think of my three books, the hardest one to write and to update is my professionals book, in part because I think I'm a little too far over the curve in terms of it's hard enough to keep up with what people are doing at scale, let alone to write it. And then it also, unlike the other books have a bunch of smaller projects. The professionals book is one big project where I lump things in. And so it becomes just this Jenga puzzle updating anything because everything is linked and I have to update everywhere. And it's really painful for me. I want discrete. I understand the two scoops approach a little bit more where I'm like, okay, like logging, boom, here you go. You know, security, like I think I if I keep it up to date, I will have to do that because this whole narrative thread crushes me more than the other books.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I took one look at that. Well, I took more than one look at that. And then it was like, yeah, nah.
Well, that was wise.
I've looked at the professional stuff and yeah, as I said before, like I will probably do some stuff around rest and that, but for me to do a Django rest book, probably not. You know, and because I had the same thing, because I was thinking about doing a full stack Django book, but instead of just picking one technology, it's sort of say, well, here's Django as a back end, and here's like starting off with Bootstrap templates. Here's how you put Bootstrap in with the DTL, and then going to jQuery and front ends, and like there's a whole bunch of stuff you can do there. But at the end of the day, what you're doing is you're pulling data out of a Django back end and putting it in a JavaScript front end. And the JavaScript libraries, you know, as much as I think the development timetable for Django could slow down sometimes so we can keep up, JavaScript is the wild west.
Yeah, it's impossible.
You know, it's like, I'm not even going to try and keep up with this. I'll just throw out short content, and if it's out of date in 6 months' time, at least I haven't put 6 months into producing it that I just now am like tied to it and an absolute slave to it. Like you'd know yourself, like you get those things out there and it's just this endless update cycle. That's why I left this update until right near when 4 was coming out, because I didn't want to be doing 3.1, then 3.2, then 4. It's like, you know what, I'm just going to leave this right until sort of October, November, December 2021. And I'm going to do the updates for 3.2. And then I'm just going to do a free supplement. Hey, this is how you install Django 4. But guess what? The rest of the code at my level is the same.
But not much, not much changes. Okay, take the path lib, you know, change would have been disruptive for Ryan tutorials.
Yeah, in terms of writing content at the level that I'm at, I don't know if we'll experience the same, but there was a bigger difference between 3.0 and 3.1 because of pathlib than there was between 2.2 and 3.0, because the only major change between 2.2 and 3.0 was async, and of course at the level I teach, async didn't really make a big difference.
You didn't need to discuss
it. Yes, we have the deprecation, but like we pick up that because the deprecation is actually nearly a full version behind. By the time I'm writing stuff for 3.2, anything that was deprecated because it was in 2.1 is kind of not relevant anymore because I've already weeded it out of the books. So I tend not to run into those issues. I don't know if it's the same with Will. It's more, but yeah, pathlib killed me. It's like pathlib first came up, somebody, because I'm in Australia. Most of my feedback comes from continental US, so it turns up in the middle of the night. And I got up in the morning and it was like three emails saying, your code's all broken. What's this import OS? It's throwing an error. And I had to madly write some errata for that sort of thing. So it's those things that catch you out. But it's more perception with Django in that, like, it's fair. You look at Java at the moment, like the dot versions of Java seem to come out every other day. At the moment, so it's not as though Django is unique in that, but yeah, I'm not sure what it is, but it tends to be.
It's always something,
difficult.
Right? Like I try to think about, sorry to interrupt, Carlton, at the same time that not a lot changes, it still is a big pull every time to update the books. And I think it's, for me, it's partly, I try really hard not to rely on external things, but you have to a little bit. So Git, GitHub, Heroku, SendGrid, and they change their stuff all the time. I had way more third-party packages and other services like Stripe and stuff at one point, and I just can't keep up with that. And so I pull those out, but it's still, I find that for me, it's like things build up in terms of people asking questions on areas maybe, or on best practices. So every update, I can't do a huge redo. I go through everything from scratch, which takes quite a while. But this current one I'm on, I'm switching from pipenv to pip. I have things more on function-based views than I have before. Like, I'm kind of cramming in all this stuff. And so I found, to make it maintainable, I can't do that every update, but this is one of those ones. So the 4.0 update, I'll go through everything again and see if what's new. I don't think that'll be as big a one, but this one I've sort of let things build up, and I kind of don't want to release something until it's that perfectionism is kicking in. So I think I'm a week, maybe by the time this comes out, the update will be out, but it's been like 90% done for 6 months. And I think I was going to, another point, what's the difference between, you and me and, people who people will pay money for and someone cranking out free things. And I think it's that extra 20%, anyone can kind of blurt out a tutorial on something, but all this stuff we've been talking about keeping up to date, about thinking larger picture, all this, basically like the fellow's role, all the stuff nobody in open source wants to do. That's, I think, the difference, and people can immediately tell. Like, I open something, it's like, well, there's typos, or the code's off. It's just like, I can't trust you. But when you just wrote it for free, it's like, well, I'm busy doing my day job. I'm not going to update this thing here. I'm curious if that resonates. I think that's how I view it anyways.
I think that's open source. I think, you have this dichotomy or this polarized thing about it, is that open source runs the world, but nobody wants to support it. It's always been the thing. Like, I, with this last book, so I was pretty much, Will, I was doing Django full time for 18 months or so while I wrote Mastering Django, and I did all the courses and everything like that. But it wasn't sustainable. It's just, if anybody out there listening thinks we're rolling in it, writing content for Django, I've got news for you.
I made more 10 years ago than I do now.
Yeah, so. Yeah. It's definitely a love job, something that we do. But, you get people coming through with that sort of thing. But open source, I think, is always going to have that sort of problem. It's very difficult to value the work that goes in. You pick up a book like ours, of Mastering Django. I think there's 1,200 hours in Mastering Django. And the beginner's book would probably have to be around about 300 or so with that. And that's before all the updates that I do.
No, the economics makes no sense.
And I'm the same. Yeah, it makes no sense at all. You just sort of... And for me, I just went back into industry and that, and I do this now. So I've got to balance my time. And you've got a young family, Will, so you know exactly what that's like. So you're always going, well, yeah, I'm putting this, you put the free stuff out, but some of this has to cost you. And this is the extra value that I'm giving you. This is the extra value that I'm adding. But to be fair, and I reckon you got that, out of that core group I've got, so my core group, the ones that have followed me all along, there's a few hundred there. They haven't all bought stuff, but there's a core group in there that it doesn't matter what I bring out, they'll buy it because they want to support it, and they're always the same guys, and they're the ones that I know by name. I can send them an email and they'll respond to me, and I'll say, what do you think of this idea? Yeah, I think that's a great idea, Nige, or no, I don't like that, and I'll give you good feedback. And ultimately, that's what you do it for.
That's right.
It's not because you get a certain amount for a book. I'm going to fiddle around with what I'm doing, to be honest. I'm going to try a few different ways to just get a few bucks here and there. I don't give stuff away. I don't know about you, but I get a lot of four-page emails about how poor somebody is, and why I should give them my book. but I don't answer those. It's like, I'm not belittling a person's situation, but it's like I put hundreds of hours into free stuff, answering emails, doing that sort of stuff and that, and there's that much free content out there. This is probably the only way for me to get some sort of return, which, as you know, at the end of the day, really just covers your publication costs. That's where I draw the line.
No, Karen.
That's all true. I think with the requests, you know, I view it as if I'm in a good mood, you know, if it's early in the morning and I feel generous, I'll do it. But generally, I don't waste too much time on it. I had a case, which I don't know if you want to talk publicly about your one of your books being, you know, coming out before publication. But I had a case where Iran, I get a lot of emails because a lot of educated people in Iran, and they're not part of the formal international monetary system. So there was someone from a university there wrote me, you know, this full page letter. And I was like, okay, sure, I'll send you the book, the ebook. And then I literally got 20 emails from, like, because this person ran like a Python Django group in Tehran. And I got 20 emails all being like variations of like, hey, just give me this book because you gave it to this other person. And I was like, well, they probably just gave it to you anyways. But I was like, you know, so anyways, it's like open source. You got to be like, you know, if people is going to steal it, they're going to steal it. And if I feel in a good mood, once in a while I'll do it. But, you know, I'm not getting paid to answer your email asking for a free copy of something I've spent thousands of hours on. So,
well, my favorite one with that, like my shortest one with that was, so my first book was traditionally published with A-Press. It was on Django CMS, I got an email from one of the guys from Django CMS, and he'd found a copy free online before I'd even received my publisher copy.
I remember you telling me that story.
but my favorite one is from a guy who ended up actually buying one of my books. But he sent me this this email saying, "I'm really confused. Which is the latest version of your book?" And he attached the original 1.8 version of Mastering Django to it. And it was like, well, so there was three files attached. And I said, so the first one is a pirate of the LeanPub version of my book. The second one is a pirate of the one off my website. And the third one is a pirate of the Pact version of the book, because Pact Publishing actually distributed that book as well. And he found all of these things, and all three of them were pirates of different versions of the same book.
Hey, Nodge, could you help me out here?
Yeah, I got a tech support question for you.
And I told him that. he asked for a discount, which was, I'll give him credit for, but he ended up buying the PDF off the website in the end.
I mean, what can you do? I mean, sometimes more these days I'll get emails from people saying, apologizing for having stolen my books and saying, I'm in university or I'm going to get this job and, you know, I'll buy your books when I have the means to. So I'm, you know, okay, like, you know, yeah,
no, anyway,
we're rambling on, but
we're coming right, up on time here. We're rambling on here. These publishers' stories about how people pirated my content. We could go on forever, folks. So I think I'm going to call time. I'm going to call time here. Like, so Nige, really good chat. Thank you for coming on the show. Thank you for reminiscing with Will, or sharing a sensitive moment with Will about pirated content.
Wow, Carlton. Ouch.
No, I'm just teasing. But we've got to call it quits because otherwise this episode will go on. Well beyond our
listeners. DjangoBook.com, MasteringDjango.com to find Nigel's stuff. We are at DjangoChat.com, ChatDjango on Twitter. And we'll see everyone next time. Bye-bye.
Join us next time. Thank you, folks.
Thank you all.